When I was a kid, I was a stick. I mean, I was incredibly thin. And I had this really fast metabolism. I had fairly weak lungs. Found out, by the way, they got stronger as I got into junior high and high school and became a runner. But when I was younger, 5th, 6th, 7th grade, 8th grade, I had pneumonia all the time. I missed at least 2 weeks of school on 3 different occasions because I had pneumonia so bad. It was absolutely horrible for me. I got behind on schoolwork. I read a lot of Hardy Boys mysteries. That part was fun. But pneumonia itself was not fun. But what I think about now, all these years later, I don't just think about the pneumonia. I think about how much worse would it have been if my parents hadn't had decent health insurance. Live from the 3-room apartment above Uncle Jack's garage, while we're in the final stages of renovating the basement. Hey there, kids. I'm Joe Salcihi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. Welcome to Money in the Morning, the podcast where usually we take not one but two headlines. But today we're going to cut it back to one headline because we have a fantastic friend of the show and guest. Dr. Victor Mangona is here with us today from 39.6. He's got some awesome videos, by the way. We're going to talk about his videos. We'll talk to him about his writing. We'll talk to him about his money mistakes all on today's show. Just what Victor wants to do, by the way, is emphasize his money mistakes. One thing that's not a mistake, how about that for a transition, is heading to Tiller. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Tiller for the best in budgeting and tracking your finances. It's all automatically updated in Google Sheets or Excel you choose every day. Managing your money in a spreadsheet 10 times faster with Tiller, the only service that automatically updates Google Sheets and Excel with your daily spending transactions and balances. If you're going to check it out, head to stackybenjamins.com/Tiller. And you know what? You'll get to kick the tires for free. Exciting show we got today. So Laura, why don't you kick this off, huh?
Who needs coffee when you have Money in the Morning headlines?
We definitely don't need coffee because today we have the guy who every time I talk to him, it's like I've got a big dose of caffeine. It's our good friend, Dr. Victor Mangona's here. How are you, dude?
What's up, Joe?
We finally got you on the show. It's about time.
I am so glad to be here. It was the last thing on my what to do in 2018 list. And I can finally cross that off of all of my goals.
Well, that's funny because my goal list was Victor Mangona on Money in the Morning. So we both win. It's a win-win.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome.
So let's talk about you just a little bit before we get into this. So you're a physician.
Yes. Fortunately or unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. And so tell me a little bit about the work that you do besides or outside of finance.
So I am actually, I'm a radiation oncologist. I do cancer radiation, and I specialize in pediatric radiation oncology, so kids with cancer, although I do treat adults too. Pediatrics is kind of my specialty, and I work at a proton facility. There's like 25 proton facilities in the United States, and I work at one of them here in Texas.
Awesome. And yeah, you're about 2.5 hours away from me.
Yeah, so we have like the Texas Triangle, you know, Dallas,
yeah,
Houston, and Texarkana.
Yeah, so that's right. We're the important part of that triangle. Yeah. By the way, and I heard this from somebody in Austin once. They said the cool thing about Texarkana, we actually have our own time zone. When you come here, you just set your watch back 100 years, and you're good. So it's fantastic. And by the way, I love Texarkana. So Texarkana people like that joke. It's like all my friends in Arkansas know the best redneck jokes. But we're not here to talk about that. We've got a great headline that you brought to the table. It seems, Victor, that Aetna lost a $25.5 million settlement. A jury award. Tell me what happened here.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't actually usually talk about healthcare related things on my videos, but this one directly relates to finance and how we insure ourselves. So in this particular case, and this is the first case I know of, a jury decided that the insurance company was wrong in not deciding to cover a treatment which was considered medically necessary and had good reason to be. And the process by which they used to decide if something will be covered, I think, is ultimately what the jury was not happy about, because these types of claims often just kind of get rubber stamped denied based on a very small list of stringent criteria, and they don't really get the due process in evaluating individual cases. It has said in this article that the medical directors or the physicians who work for these insurance companies, the for-profit insurance companies, are reviewing like 80 cases a day. So if they're working 8 hours, working regular non-physician time, that's 10 per hour or 6 minutes per particular claim. So when I get them on the phone for like a prior auth, I make sure to utilize as much time as I can with them, because I want to actually spend a little bit of time on these cases. But yeah, the patient was denied coverage. They tried to raise their own money to cover the treatment, which was considered medically necessary. And unfortunately, she ended up dying within a year later, but she didn't get it covered by Aetna.
Let's read the top of this. This is from CNN, and I'll link to it on my Average Joe Money Twitter feed. An Oklahoma jury has awarded $25.5 million to the family of a cancer patient denied coverage by Aetna, as Victor explained, with jurors saying the insurer acted recklessly and that the verdict was meant as a message for Aetna to change its ways. The award's believed to be the largest verdict in an individual bad faith insurance case in Oklahoma history, one court observer said, and could have major ramifications across the country for a form of cancer treatment called proton beam therapy, the type of thing that Victor works in. The case revolved around a 2014 denial of coverage for Arana Cunningham, who had stage four nasopharyngeal, easy for you to say, cancer near her brainstem. Her doctors wanted her to receive proton beam therapy, a targeted form of radiation that could pinpoint her tumor without the potential for blindness or other side effects of standard radiation. And she didn't get that. You know, our big point, let's kind of, Victor, talk about what this has to do with your wallet. You know, Aetna, a major insurer, right? Insures tons and tons of people, a major player. I'm sure you see Aetna insurance all the time. Generally, I think probably does the right thing. But even with a big company, whether it's big company, little company, having insurance isn't just about how much you pay. We're in open enrollment season for a lot of people. It also, to this article's point, it's about the coverage that you're actually going to receive and claims payment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know, Aetna is the third biggest insurer in the country from what I've seen, and their revenue annually is $60 billion. So they're a big insurer. And yeah, and actually today is my deadline to enroll in my benefits. Speaking of which, that's on my schedule for as soon as this is done, is to make sure I go through my benefit options. I'm lucky. My wife is a University of Texas employee. She's a physician. And so I can opt to choose her healthcare benefits. And with university benefits, they tend to be pretty good. But you know, we do pay a good amount for that. And at the end of the day, you expect that what you're paying for will give you what you need. We're finally at a place now where we have enough liquidity personally, where we can self-insure the vast majority of things that come our way. But big medical items are the things that can sink anybody very quickly.
Yeah.
And so we depend on these to make sure we stay financially solvent.
I want to ask you about two different things. One of them is a lot of people now going to these medical co-op programs where you put your money in, and often they're religious based programs. What do you think about programs like those?
I think they're very interesting. And I think it's interesting because it's a kind of a different way to approach the same type of problem. And I know a lot of people who have moved toward them, and I've also had multiple patients who have had them. My experience as a clinician has been that it's been hard to get those plans to pay.
Oh.
But what I do is a big ticket item, and it's very easy to say no to big ticket items as opposed to a lot of small items. So from where I've been, it hasn't necessarily been as beneficial to patients, but I think it is interesting because it does change the way we think about how we insure ourselves for medical care.
You know, the thing that I would caution people about when it comes to these programs from a former financial planner point of view is because I hear that they you know, they're so much more cost effective for people. Once again, a lower cost, and the pool is cleaner. If you, look at a lot of health insurance programs, you've got some fairly not very healthy people in the pool that they call from, which is, so their hallmark is that they're going to be people that are generally healthier. They can be a little bit more picky about who they choose. The big thing is, if you look at these sites, it says not actuarially sound. And what that means is if somebody does it, then the reason they don't want to pay Victor for your big ticket item is because one or two of those big ticket items can sink the whole ship for everybody. So I get really worried about claims coverage. And I think there's two parts to anything. There's what you pay for and what you actually get. Now, do you know physicians? I was talking about this with a friend recently, Victor. Physicians who don't take health insurance at all, and instead you pay to play. You just pay cash. Do you know many people that are working that way as physicians?
I don't know personally. I saw one person on a Facebook group who says that he is going to be voluntarily uninsured. And again, I think self-insurance is fantastic, and I think you can self-insure yourself for most all things if you have enough net worth and liquidity. But some big medical costs, I think that's hard to swallow. If it's a small risk, one small thing can sink your ship, right? So I still think we need to have some sort of insurance for the biggest costs.
Yeah, I agree. We do these live in front of a Facebook audience. And if you'd like to be part of our Facebook audience, head to facebook.com/iStackBenjamins. Gregory's here with us. And Gregory says, I used to feel so frustrated whenever I visited a doctor. It always seemed like we get a bill for a couple $100. And like Victor said, we had an expensive plan. So we thought we'd have good coverage. What you pay and what you get, Victor, often two different things.
Absolutely. And especially in medical care, because it's interesting, the majority of medical care, if you think about the people who are actually directly involved in the care of the patient, we have the physician, and then we have, let's say, drugs or tests. But ultimately, the costs of medical care have gone up higher and higher and higher over the past however period of time you want to look at. But that increased cost has not necessarily gone to the people or the things that are providing the care. A lot of it has gone to all the increased bureaucracy and costs of dealing with all of the red tape that we have to pay to make sure that we can get paid. And so the system just gets very bloated and inefficient.
And Gregory also says it really took reading through the plan brochure to kind of figure out how to save money. Once I got my head around it, I really began to appreciate HSAs. HSAs, I think a lot of people on that bandwagon now.
Yeah, I think HSAs are fantastic if you have a good plan that qualifies, and if your out-of-pocket costs aren't potentially too high. If you have an option of a PPO and an HDHP or a high deductible health plan, and, you know, you need to look at those options. I think I have a lot of employees who are young, out of college, and they don't have much liquidity, and they look at just the premium, and they want to save $20 a month by choosing the high deductible health plan as opposed to the PPO. And I tell them, well, look at the out-of-pocket maximums for these two things first. And do you have the capital to cover that if you had to? And they usually say no. Well, I say, well, you know, an HSA is a great way to save. But let's make sure, first of all, that you're covering yourself for what you need now while you're just getting started out. And if you have a PPO with like a $20 per paycheck premium, like, and that's what my employees have, that's a fantastic option. My wife has hers, and we use her PPO for our whole family, and it's very, very, very minimal. So we go that route just because it's worth it to us. The HSA would be fantastic if I could do that also, but with a family and chronic healthcare conditions and medications, it's just something that The difference is not worth it to us. If we had to pay a premium for the PPO, then by all means, it might be better to go that route.
Yeah, the freedom from worry that you have with your family by going with the lower cost PPO, lower out of pocket cost PPO, far worth it to forego the HSA. Yeah. Brian is here. Brian and I working on real estate. Brian's become my BFF lately, Victor, because this real estate, as you know, is so fun. You do some real estate transactions.
Yeah, no, I love real estate. That's basically the whole taxable side of my portfolio is all in real estate.
Yes. Brian and I have had a lot of fun doing real estate until the last a couple of days. Because I don't know if you know this, sometimes the closing doesn't go the way that you had hoped, as smoothly as you had hoped.
Usually.
Oh my, yeah, like every freaking time. But anyway, Brian says, how do you feel about people who are middle class, single, and the affordable plan is $400 a month with a $6,500 deductible with no copays? But you know, my personal opinion, Brian, and we'll let Victor weigh in on this, but it's not just about what you're paying. It's also about what you get, who's in plan, what type of plan, the flexibility of the plan. Victor, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, from a number standpoint, $400 a month is reasonable. But again, you got to know what you're getting for it.
Yeah, good stuff there. So I think our big takeaway here is it isn't just about pay. Now, one question I wanted to ask you, is there a way you think that this family and this woman who lost her life, that wouldn't have happened? In other words, is there something the family could have done with Aetna that could have made this right?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't have the inside scoop on the story. I know some people who were, I know one of the guys who was one of the expert witnesses in it, but I intentionally did not talk to him about the case because I didn't want to have information that wasn't publicly available. But I mean, there are a lot of appeals that we do as physicians after we're denied, and we go through, there can be multiple levels of appeal. But all of these things take time. I mean, I had a recent case just 2 weeks ago where we got the CEO of Atmos Energy, talk to that person directly after I got denied to treat his child, this patient's child. So the father's employer, which was Atmos Energy, we got the CEO and had a communication with that person to work with the insurance, and then we got it approved. But all of these things take time, and there's no guarantee that something will eventually be overturned. So you keep trying and trying and trying and hoping, but you don't know what you're doing and if what your results are going to be. And all that time that passes can be at the significant detriment to the patient, but also increases all the burden and the costs of all the people who are going through this process, ultimately driving up the costs of healthcare for everybody.
I was talking to somebody just before we recorded today, and it was funny because as we were talking, she was talking about this very thing, about how you know, we're so busy. If we can get one thing done per day outside of our work, like, we feel awesome. And thinking about the time it takes to fight your insurance company, I think the bigger thing for me actually isn't just this. I see people wonder about insurance and whether they should even have it or not. When you hear about all this fighting, this is bad with insurance. I mean, with insurance, this is a horrible situation for this family. Without insurance, it doesn't get better. It actually is worse. So looking at claims coverage, looking at the cost, looking at the coverage level, and determining, and this is, I think, the important part. Health insurance, obviously, very, very important. Life insurance, you know, we talk about Haven Life all the time at Stacky Benjamins. Life insurance, very important. Disability insurance, important. Other types of coverage, not nearly as important as this. As an example, for most people, accidental death and dismemberment, you probably don't need it unless you're sticking your hands in machinery all day. You probably, if you've got a dangerous job, maybe you need it. As I get insurance on my new house, they ask me about flood insurance. Obviously, a lot of people in Houston wish they'd had flood insurance when they had all the flooding last year there. But for me, moving to Detroit, to an area of Detroit where they haven't had a flood in, I don't know, since the Stone Age, I don't know when there's been a flood in this area. It's, you know, me needing flood insurance, and they tried to sell me flood insurance, my insurer. Great, great insurer too, USAA. But they said, hey, you know, flood insurance isn't included. So if you want to get that. And I understand that that's important because a lot of people in Houston didn't think they'd have a flood. But for them to point that out was great. But you need to know the risk versus the reward. You know, let's talk about a different type of insurance while we're on that. Victor, do you and your spouse, do you guys have pets?
Yes, Penelope is walking around in the background. I was glad that she hasn't barked. I left the door open knowing that if she knows I'm here and can get to me, that she won't bark. Right. So yeah, we have a 7-pound, 5-year-old mini poodle.
What do you think about pet insurance? Because we have debates on that all the time in our basement Facebook group.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. So when we got our pet 2 years ago, before we had a child, this was like the next stage in our marriage was get a pet, you know, before the human came along. I actually had one of my employees had a dog with cancer, and there's actually a place that does radiation nearby. It's basically a cash business for the most part. But yeah, some people have coverage through insurance. And I looked at the cost of some of the things of care. And I said, well, we don't have the liquidity to pay for this right now, if I wanted to. And so we decided for like $30, might have been $40 a month, which was nothing in terms of our cash flow, that at that point in our lives, we're going to do it, because I don't want to be in a situation when I'm deciding between potentially cancer treatment, and cancer is a very common cause of death in pets, versus just not treating. So I wanted to have that choice and not be financially strained to make that decision. So we actually do have coverage right now. It doesn't cover pre-existing conditions. So we've had one instance, or she has bad knees, because she's like a purebred poodle. A lot of them have bad knees. So we've had to pay for some knee surgery. Oh, and she's from Texarkana.
Ish, all right.
Yeah, Poodle Patch Rescue. We drove all the way out there before I got hooked onto your show. They're the only poodle rescue in North Texas. And so we went out there to get Penelope. But we knew she had bad knees, and that's why she wasn't sold by the breeder. We took her, we accepted that risk. She did get pancreatitis once, and on that one claim, we got our money back. So at least at this point, we're at a wash. But for me, it ultimately is whether or not you feel like you're willing to take on the financial liability later and willing to make the choices that you want to, not being constrained by money. But
yeah,
certainly is something we could self-insure at this point.
Well, and I was going to say that brings up something else too. For some people, depending on your cash reserve levels, you know, and your risk tolerance, having that cash reserve in place can replace the insurance.
Absolutely.
Hey, we're getting that buzzing again, Victor. So I'm gonna send you back to the lobby while we talk about Tiller for a second. We're gonna bring Victor back for 4 questions about his money here in just a second. But while Victor is fixing that, let's talk about Tiller, because Tiller's nice enough to sponsor the show. I use Tiller myself because I like the ease of spreadsheets. I think that it's funny. I would have never said that before. I would have said the spreadsheets are a pain in the butt, and I can't go quickly with a spreadsheet. Just give me an app. Well, the problem I've had with different apps is that the apps that are out there, not always my favorite things to use, because of the fact that they have something that I don't like. The cool thing about Tiller, I can take these templates that they give me and I can tweak them so it's exactly what I like. And the neat thing, neat being the technical term, I can press a button that automatically updates the sheet right away. So different than a lot of my friends that have spreadsheets and they spend hours and hours having to update all the results. I press one button, it's all updated, it's in the template. I tweak the template for what I want to see. I can add new data, I can delete stuff. It's all at stackybenjamins.com/Tiller. By the way, you can go directly to Tiller, but with us, you get a longer free trial period. You also help the show, because Tiller pays us, and this is how we keep podcasting. They pay us based on people going there and using it. So if you're happy with what you got, obviously stick with that. If you're going to use Tiller, I hope you use our link, stackybenjamins.com/Tiller. All right, it's the time. Let's bring back Victor. We have had this fun buzzing noise, Victor, for a long time. Do we got him back? Okay. We got you back.
I'm here. I can hear you.
And there's no buzz. So
okay,
we,
good.
Yeah, so we're good.
Buzz kill.
Yeah, that's right. No buzz, and Alexander's here. Hey, Alexander. I believe Alexander's in Germany, I think. So we got people in Germany listening to you, Victor. How about that?
It's amazing. Power of the internet.
It is fantastic. So we've got four questions that we ask guests of the show. And question number one is this. You have a natural interest in medicine. When did you first become interested in finance?
Well, I've always been a numbers guy. So I've loved numbers since I was like in kindergarten and preschool. And so numbers was always my my way of thinking about things often. But ultimately, I went to engineering school. So I liked using numbers to solve problems. And once I finished, basically got done with training, and I was sitting, well, between my wife and I, we had about $500,000 of student loan debt. And we also had good incomes pending. We had to make some big financial decisions about how we were going to manage that money. And so I started then devoting a lot of time into deciding how to go about that in the best possible way. Is the buzzing still there?
Nope, but buzzing okay. is way gone. I want to ask you this question that Gregory asks. By the way, Kelly's here. Hey, Kelly. I'd love to hear whether or not, knowing what he knows now about the job, if Victor would still go into medicine. Would you still go into medicine?
All right. So the second question was going to be, what's your biggest financial mistake?
Biggest financial mistake, yeah.
And I have never taken food from a minibar thinking that it was going to be free. So I haven't made that one. But from a purely financial aspect, I think going into medicine in general is a very poor decision. It's not just the cost of the training, which is for a lot of people about $300,000, but it's the time. You have 4 years of medical school, and then often we did 6 years of training each, my wife and I. So that's basically 10 years. If you break up your lifespan into decades, and you have like your first two decades where you're dependent, then you have the next, let's say, four decades of which you are accruing money, and then you have the remaining 2 to 3 decades of which you are not accruing money, you're basically giving up 1/4 of your earnings career. That time, that 10-year period is a time it takes for the stock market to double on average. But instead of growing your net worth, you are actually decreasing it. So you're starting a decade later, have one less doubling time of your assets, and you're starting at a hole. So that hole of $300,000, it takes people years just to get out of the hole. So your typical physician is around age 40 when they are just breaking positive. So yeah. Then you have like 20 to 25 years to grow your nest egg. So that's a very short time in terms of compound interest in comparison to the person who potentially has 45 years.
And two things about that. People say that, you know what, that doubling, well, okay, the first doubling. Well, it's not about the first doubling. It's about the last one. Yeah. Everybody else is going from $1 million to $2 million. Doctors going from 500,000 to $1 million or whatever the number might be.
Interestingly, the Medscape does a survey of physician wellness or physician wealth. They broke it down by age, and they found in their survey that physicians who are 65 or older, it was either 20 or 25% don't even have a net worth of $1 million.
Yeah. Well, and that brings up...
That's a whole bunch of other things.
Well, I was going to say that brings up the second thing, which they talk about in The Millionaire Next Door, which is doctors also often feel this lifestyle as a community leader to live what looks like a lavish lifestyle. A lot of physicians showing wealth, but not really having it.
Absolutely. I mean, you have the income, and as a physician, as you're accruing debt, you have the paycheck to paycheck mentality where you're just trying to get by. But that becomes very well ingrained into how you think about money, because you're saying all you need to do is make it to that point when I have the big paycheck coming. Well, if you take that same mindset that you've had and then don't change it, then you end up being in a far worse position. So you really have to hold back and say, yeah, I can only live off of this proportion of my money. And so my wife and I, we first said no more than half. We're going to live off of one income.
Gotcha.
That would be the highest we would ever go. But then we'd also still max out our individual retirement account. So it's more like at least 60%. But we've been able to crank that up to 80-85%. And I tell residents who are people on training that if you just didn't scale up your lifestyle right out of training, after about 5 to 7 years, depending on how much debt you have, you would be able to live potentially your resident income lifestyle, which is not poverty. It's like the average American income. It's like $50,000 to $60,000.
Right.
And you could have that lifestyle for perpetuity. But once you scale up your lifestyle to your income, it's so hard to ever catch up.
Well, and it's also hard to go back, right? Yeah. I mean,
going down is so much harder than going up.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember talking to Scott Trench from Bigger Pockets Money about that, about it's easier to work with a 20-year-old or a 22-year-old and teach them to just not buy the house without having a roommate or renters or whatever it might be, or to live close enough to your work to bike, than to tell a 45-year-old to get rid of the house, get rid of the car, you know, and change that lifestyle back.
Yeah, take your kids out of private school.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So next question is how did you solve the biggest problem? But I think you talked about it. You guys have downsized your lifestyle significantly.
Yeah. So we took our income and we just we've incrementally increased our lifestyle, but we did very, very consciously. So the things that we inflate are the things that are really going to provide value to us. So we work a ton. So I have no problem paying for people to help us with all the other things that we don't have time to do.
Yeah.
Like housekeeping. So we are happy to pay that money that I would never have paid when we were in training, but that gives us time. That gives me time to do things like this. We had a bigger house that we bought with a low down payment with a physician mortgage. And it was a lot more house than we needed, but we wanted to get that rental property. And we moved out of that rental property. We rented out. We actually do a short-term rental in one of these. And we are now currently in a 2-bedroom apartment. And this suits what we need. It's like 1,400 square feet. It's good enough for my wife, me, a 7-pound dog, and a 17-pound baby. But by keeping the fixed costs low and utilizing our cash flow for the things that will really provide us value, we can still manage to save the vast majority of our income and reach financial independence in probably the next 2 years.
Is that your biggest win? Because that's my next question is that your biggest win? Or do you have do you have one win in particular that you'd like to share?
Ultimately, I mean, money is a long game, right? No one thing we do in our lives is going to affect our entire lives, more so than the person you're married to. So that's first being married and staying married, but two, who that person is, because your finances are a joint thing. And so marrying the right person ultimately was the biggest money win. Not only did I marry somebody who is very reasonable with the way she spends money, and in a lot of ways, she's more thrifty than I am, but she also has a physician specialist income. So I've won multiple times over.
Are you,
when it comes to that.
Are you saying that Kate is your biggest financial win?
There's no question. There's no question, at least objectively speaking. There's nothing I could have possibly done that will long-term provide more financial value to my life.
I don't know. I don't know if that's romantic, Victor, or if you guys are dating and you're figuring out the ROI on this relationship is kind of creepy.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that stuff back then. It was just, right. I met her. I remember the day I met her. It was the first day of intern year, like before we started, when we had like orientation. I met her and I wanted to marry her the moment I met her. It took me all of residency to make that happen.
I know her a little bit and you're right. I have no idea how you did it because she's clearly your better half. And, but somehow you won that thing. John is
that
here.
The biggest win.
Yeah. Claudia's here. Hey, Claudia, John's here and says his Kate is also his biggest win. So it's a big day for Kate. All right. I think that's going to do it for today. Let's talk a little bit for just a second, because a lot of the people that we have on, they don't have a channel of their own, but you've got some of the funnest videos, use fun props, You've a great time. But it's at 39.6.com, the number 39, the spell out point, and then the number 6.com. How did you come up with that, 39.6?
Well, I had come up with the idea a year ago, back before the new tax brackets were out, because I wanted to create content that was specifically for high-income professionals, and that was the top tax bracket at the time. So even in like the physician space, a lot of the financial topics discussed are for people who, for example, have one physician, and you're making a lot of money, okay? But when you have a two-physician specialist family, there's another tier of income, and all the tax brackets change once you're at the top, and there are a lot of other things we have to think about. So I wanted to create things that are more focused on that area of income, although a lot of the information, you know, trickles down to everybody.
I was going
to
say, a lot of people
targeting that.
Yeah, a lot of people can actually use this. Even if you're not in that sub niche group, it's good stuff for a lot of people.
Thank you. Yeah, before I became a physician, I was a teacher for 2 years. I taught high school level, like 9th grade, 11th grade science, and I taught a calculus class. So I taught for 2 years, and I love teaching. I went to Montessori school growing up, and you learned, and then you taught your classmates. And so I always did that, and I tutored throughout high school and college and medical school, and I always loved teaching. And that was one of the biggest things that was missing once I had my current position as a physician, was I didn't get to really teach as much as I wanted to. And so I kind of go back to how I used to teach. One of my co-residents, he said, if you're going to do something, make it as simple as possible. And so I think about how did I learn things when I was in 9th grade? But I take advanced things and kind of bring it at that level, because you have people who make a lot of money but have no financial understanding. And so you have to really start at that level for them to kind of understand their money before they just trust people blindly, which happens often. And unfortunately, often those people aren't necessarily looking for their best interests.
Yeah, I love your use of props, and I love that as a place for us to end it today on keeping it simple. Keep it simple, stupid, right?
Absolutely. Top of the razor.
Victor Mann, thanks for hanging out with us today.
Joe, thank you. It's very much a pleasure of mine. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, thanks everybody who's hanging out with us on Facebook. If you want to join our Facebook community, facebook.com/iStackBenjamins. And we come on at random times. Sadly, we do not have a set time. Or actually, maybe that's good. It's a surprise when we come on. It's the light of your day that you didn't expect. I don't know. How can I sell that better? But facebook.com/iStackBenjamins. We'll see everybody next time. Go stack some Benjamins. Bye-bye.
Money in the Morning is created by Joe Saul Sehi and comes to your ears because of the collective genius of our producer, Richie Rutter-Reese, engineer, Caden Thompson, and a pack of very well-trained ferrets here in the basement. You'll find links to all of our headlines featured on today's show in Joe's Twitter feed at @AverageJoeMoney. I know you already know this too, but Money in the Morning is for entertainment purposes only. You shouldn't act on anything recommended by a bunch of entertainers in a basement without first consulting with your financial advisor and second, having your head examined. Have a headline you'd like us to discuss? Send them to joe@stackingbenjamins.com or put them on our Stacking Benjamins Basement closed Facebook group. This show is copyright 2018 Stacking Benjamins LLC, all rights reserved. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I reserve the right to always say, we'll see you next time back here on Money in the Morning.